Good morning. The gospel lesson for this morning is taken from the 10th chapter of the Gospel of Mark. And I'm going to read that as soon as I find it here. From the Gospel of Mark, beginning with verse 35. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him, and they said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." And he said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" And they replied, "We are able." And then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand and my left is not mine to grant. It is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the ten heard this, they became angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom you recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. It is not to be so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be the slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for the ransom of many." I have three daughters, a couple of whom are sitting out in the congregation this morning. But when they were little, they would appear as if by magic whenever the bells of the ice cream truck jangled through the neighborhood. And they would each ask for a dime. You can tell how long ago that was. I don't think ice cream trucks carry dime products anymore. Occasionally, though, one of my girls would sidle up to me with a funny little smile on her face, climb into my lap, put her arms around my neck, and say, "Daddy, would you do something for me if I ask you nicely?" And with that, I'd get a little kiss on the cheek. I knew two things immediately. Whatever it was going to cost more than a dollar. And she had already asked her mother, and her mother had said no. I knew one other thing. After another little kiss and a tiny tear, I was going to give in. Well, my daughters are now grown women, but they can still do that to me. My only consolation is that my eldest daughter now has two sons of her own, and they're working that same kind of routine on her. I just sit back and smile. I guess the point of this is that if the request were simply for a dime or a quarter for an ice cream bar, there would be no need for the softening up process. Reading the scripture passage from the Gospel of Mark, as we did a few moments ago, it sounds as if something of this sort was going on with two of Jesus' disciples, the brothers James and John. The incident occurred along the road to Jerusalem during that journey Jesus made with his disciples that led to the final denouement of his life. James and John were not too sure that they had any business making this kind of a request, and so they tried to approach Jesus a little obliquely. "Teacher, we would like for you to do something for us." Now, Jesus must have anticipated what was coming, and he may have betrayed a little impatience as he replied, "What is it you want me to do for you?" Now, note, he didn't say, "Oh, certainly, anything at all. Just ask, and it's yours." On the contrary, Jesus' response was noncommittal. With that, the brothers said, "Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." It's difficult to imagine that these two disciples could make such a request without some embarrassment. It really was unworthy of them, partly because it betrayed such misunderstanding of the kinds of things Jesus had been trying to say to them about humility and about the necessity for serving rather than being served. It betrayed the fact that they had not really been listening, even to the things that Jesus said just prior to this incident. He had been sharing with them his deep foreboding with regard to the events in his immediate future. He suggested that a terrible time of testing was before them when they reached Jerusalem, that the request of James and John represents an embarrassing lack of sensitivity is suggested by the way in which Matthew reports the incident. In Matthew's gospel, I suppose in an effort to save the integrity of the disciples, it is their mother who comes and makes the request. Now, it would certainly be easier to justify a mother asking for places of privilege for her sons. What mother wouldn't like to introduce her sons to the ladies of the Bridge Club as my son, the Prime Minister, or my son, the Assistant King? At any rate, request was made, and Jesus must have experienced a long moment of disappointment over the obvious lack of understanding that it betrayed. After a long pause, he said, "You have no idea what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup I drink? Are you able to pay the price of the position you seek? Have you thought about what that might really mean?" And they betrayed the fact that they had not thought about the price or the meaning at all, because they both answered with a sort of careless, "Oh yes, of course. We are able." Certainly James and John had not really pondered the words that Jesus had spoken. He had been trying to warn them of what they faced. He had told them they were going to Jerusalem now and that they could be confident that before them lay a terrible period of testing. The very words he had spoken should have sobered the disciples. He told them that he would be mocked, spit upon, scourged, crucified. The words ascended in the terrible force of their meaning. This was the cup of which Jesus spoke, and the intensity of his question to James and John must surely have matched the intensity of his gaze as he framed it. "Are you able to drink the cup I drink? Are you able to drink this cup? This very cup of suffering and death?" But they missed his meaning. So caught up were they in visions of themselves dressed in the purple of worldly power that they responded thoughtlessly, not counting what it might really mean, what it did finally mean for them both. "Oh yes, of course, we can do that." Perhaps we can identify most fully with James and John in this moment because so often we do overestimate our commitment, or perhaps more accurately, we underestimate the real demands of discipleship. After all, what could be so difficult about becoming a disciple, an active participant in God's kingdom? "Of course," we say. "Certainly," we say. "We can do that." We might note that becoming a member is not too difficult in most churches. In most cases, all that is required is a monosyllabic grunt in response to a ministerial mumble. Nothing hard about that. We attest to certain beliefs, which may or may not be too stringent. We promise to support the church, but no one is very specific about how much or to what extent, and we're left pretty much to interpret for ourselves what that might mean. We promise to worship God more or less regularly and try to understand what Jesus was talking about. It's a little like the way I first tried to learn to ski. I got up to the top of the hill with skis on my feet and I launched myself over the edge. And I was about halfway down when it suddenly occurred to me that sooner or later I was going to have to either stop or turn. And I didn't have the foggiest notion how to do either one. After I ran into a snow fence at the bottom of the hill, I decided it was time to take lessons. Well, when we become church members, which in this day and age has something to do with being disciples of Jesus, everything is simple until we suddenly realize that life has some pretty sharp turns sometimes. And those turns may represent a real test of our commitment. Soon or late, Jesus asks every one of his disciples if they are able to drink the cup he drinks. In Jesus' age, that meant laying life on the line. And I'm convinced that that was what he was asking of James and John. Are you able to drink this cup, he said? Are you ready to lay down your lives? And can you do that realizing there are no bargains to be made? That the promise of prominence in the kingdom is not mine to grant? That I can only offer you the personal knowledge and satisfaction of faithfulness and a place in the kingdom of service? That was the price of discipleship for James and John. The price in our age is different. While there are those in our generation who have laid their lives on the line, the cup we are most often offered is one of a different order. Perhaps not as personally devastating, but in many ways equally demanding. For there are ways to lose life other than dying. In his Christmas play, A Child is Born, Stephen Vincent Benet portrays the innkeeper's wife speaking to those in the kitchen of Bethlehem's inn as they try to decide how they will respond to the momentous birth that has taken place in their stable. She says, "God pity us, for we are human, and do not always see the vision when it comes, the shining change, or if we see it, do not follow it, because it is too hard, too strange, too new, too unbelievable, too difficult, warring too much with common, easy ways. Oh, life is not lost by dying. Life is lost minute by minute, day by dragging day, in a thousand small, uncaring ways, the smooth, appeasing compromises of time. Always, always." The cup we are offered by Jesus is one of sensitivity. A significant part of real discipleship is sensitiveness to human need and human pain. It is a demand with depth, and it is never easy. To expose yourself to the hurt of others, to take their burdens upon yourself, to let your heart be rent with anguish for those whose plight is none of your doing or any of your legal responsibility, that's a difficult way indeed. Are you able to drink that cup? We look in our newspapers and we see the child whose pet was killed on the street. The men and women who are homeless and abused. Those whose lives are devastated by earthquakes. Innocent people who are the victims of terrorists. And our hearts go out to all of them. But the shared and sharing life of discipleship is more than these situations which grasp us naturally. What about the plight of those who do not generate sympathy in us? What about the necessity for loving those who are difficult to love? The terrorists themselves, who who are the victims sometimes of injustice and poverty and hopelessness. Can we accept that cup too? Recall for a moment George and Martha in Edward Albee's play, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Arriving home from a party in a small college community, they proceed to deepen their mental anesthesia with more of the contents of a bottle. And joined later by a younger couple, they lay bare all of the brutality and all of the alienation and all of the separateness that plagues their mutual life. George and Martha verbally rip and tear and cut and destroy each other before our very eyes and before the eyes of their friends. We're exposed to the hellishness and the cruelty of the vicious games they play. We see loveless, hopeless, alienated, lost, separate people, balanced upon the very brink of a terrible abyss of loneliness and hatefulness, they suddenly grasp at each other. But all they find there is their mutual fear. Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf? Says George, with a tentative hand on Martha's shoulder at the end of the play. And her pained and painful response is, I am, George. I am. Albee has put a sensitive finger on the real lives of many people. These are not mere fictions, mere shades conjured in a warped artistic mirror. These are real people who live in your neighborhood, who go to your church, who belong to your bridge club. You don't believe that? One of the most disturbing facts of my ministry is knowing that well over half of the marriages I have performed will end in bitter and rancorous divorce. The burdens of these people weigh upon us if we are sensitive. And it is to this kind of hurt that we are asked to offer ourselves if we are disciples of Jesus. Not because the people have a claim on us, but because Jesus has. And the love, even of the unlovable, is a part of the cup he asks us to drink. Well, we feel for those who are clean and pressed and neat, but the cup of true discipleship seeks out those who are not. I remember a cartoon I saw some time ago. It depicted a pious little man praying this way. I'd like to love my brother, but Lord, have you looked at him lately? Stupid, dirty, ugly. Why, it's hard enough to tolerate those who are close to me. So if it's okay with you, Lord, you love my brother, and I'll love you. The stupid, the dirty, the ugly are among those to whom Jesus asks us to reach out, whose burdens he asks us to help them bear. Jesus said, can you drink my cup? Can you drink my cup? Now, perhaps it's too easy to exude the sure confidence of James and John, especially when Jesus' bitter cup was not yet before them. There's almost a casual manner in their response. Of course, we are able. As a matter of fact, they were not able. Not, at least not immediately. They didn't realize it. Perhaps they couldn't even conceive of it. But at that very moment, Jesus was but a few short days from crucifixion. And James and John and all of the rest of the disciples were near to a time when they would deny and betray their friend and teacher. Always, always, there is the temptation to claim loyalty without understanding the demands that it may place upon us. Later on, reflecting back upon these final days with Jesus, all of the disciples had occasion to wish that they had been more faithful, more courageous, more loyal. Now, we are not as far removed from James and John and Peter and the rest as we might suppose. The gospel writer has left us a poignant and revealing little vignette from the events shortly after Jesus was arrested. Simon Peter, the one who had sworn that he would go to death with Jesus, crept into the courtyard of the high priest's house where Jesus was being interrogated, accused by a servant girl of being a friend of Jesus. Peter said, "I don't know the man you're talking about." Again, the maid said to others standing around, "I've seen him. I know that he is one of them." And again, Peter denied it. And then a little later, one of the bystanders said, "Oh, you certainly are one of them. You're a Galilean." But Peter started to curse and swear. And he said, "I don't know the man you're talking about." And immediately, a rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the words of Jesus, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." And with that, Peter fell down in the dust of the high priest's courtyard, and he wept. So it must have been with James and John and the rest as they remembered how lightly they had sworn their love and allegiance and how quickly they had denied and betrayed their word. But their tears washed them clean. And when they finally saw themselves in the light of their very humanness, then they were truly ready and able to drink Jesus' cup. And drink it they did, every drop. Perhaps that is the experience that must come finally to us all. Perhaps I have to look deep inside myself and know that I too can betray my commitment to Jesus. Perhaps only my tears can I be washed clean. Perhaps only in my failure am I prepared to become the person I can become. Perhaps only when I see the truth about my weakness can I become strong. Yesterday, an unfamiliar hand reached out to me. He was a stranger in my neighborhood. I didn't dislike him. I didn't even know him. But he was different, and I was afraid. So I turned away. Yesterday, a youthful hand reached out to me to ask me to join him as he protested the injustice he saw about him. I knew there was injustice, and I sympathized with his cause. But his hair was long, and he had a scraggly beard, and he wore ragged jeans, and I was embarrassed in his presence, and I was frightened for what I might lose. So I turned away. Yesterday, a childish hand reached out to me to ask me to stay home and play with her. But I was too busy for her childish games. And though I professed to love my child, I turned away. Three hands reached out to me. Three times I turned away. And immediately, a rooster crowed. And there in the high priest's courtyard, I knelt with Peter in the dust, and I wept. I wept. Let us pray together.